Welcome back to Brass Stacks. Yes, as before the break, I was asking you about the 26 ministers. How can you justify the cost of 26 ministers with everything happening, with the economy being what it is? How can you justify it?
But the thing is, just remember that it's all restoring the economy, transforming it as well, and the recovery that we have to make. Now, if you look at a ministry like Home Affairs and the Attorney General would have so many different departments of government that there's no way that you can concentrate and focus on achieving your best, because it's as if you're giving just part of you to an issue. In this setup here, it is more about accountability and given what we have to come through, so that you would evaluate these ministers based on value for money. That is, are they delivering, and you can in fact extract from them the delivery, because it's more concentrated. And I believe that in this environment where we have to be so fleet of foot, that to have a more efficient ministry or one that is not as broad now makes you more comfortable as a minister. And in the environment, truth be told, that while people may make a lot of noise about it, you're talking about an additional couple of million dollars, two or three, in an environment where the economy is in excess of $10 billion. Now, people who are obviously going to become unemployed and saying will frown at that. But to get this right, to put Barbados back on track, is absolutely necessary if we're once again to punch above our weight. And that has to be seen as the critical issue going forward. We cannot get out of this by working like we did yesteryear. We have to up everything in terms of setting targets, meeting targets, and when we meet a target, sit back and reflect, don't get excited, renew your vision, go forward, and always be striving for excellence, so that a more tailored ministry gives that opportunity to a minister. That's my view.
All right. We go back to the phone lines. You're on Brass Stacks. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Thanks for the words from Clyde Maskell. I think a lot of the words said are reasonable. I want to ask a specific question in respect to the debt exchange. So, and the NAS. So for the NAS, you're applying a 37.5% haircut to the face value or the principal, which will mean that if I had a dollar in a bond, I would have got back, or a dollar invested in a bond, I would have got back a dollar when it matures, and I will now get back 62.5 cents, if my math is correct. I'll also get back a lower coupon. I know you've changed the coupons as well, but the coupon will be based on the new principal, on the new face value, so the coupons should be lower as well, even though you've changed the rate.
Right.
What I want to understand, though, is what was the government's consideration with respect to pension reform, given the discount that the NAS will face? Now, I heard you speak of the arrears that you will pay, and that's fine. But I think from a funding perspective, the unfunded gap between liabilities and assets for the NAS will grow. And that will more or less lead to one or two things. Either A, benefits will have to be decreased, or B, we will have to work longer to get the same benefits. Actually, that is what will be required. So I want to understand from you guys where you are with respect to pension reform. There's also a second issue with respect to pensions that I want to understand as well.
Let him ask one question at a time. That way, right. So you just
that's stand. The first one.
Right. Just but hold on. Let him ask. Let him answer. Go ahead. And then you come back to you. Go right ahead with Dr.
The haircut is true, and it is equivalent to 1¾ years of contribution. You got that?
Yes.
Right. The net impact, therefore, on the NAS as a result of what we're doing is going to be about $800 million.
So that is on the on the asset side.
Yeah.
When you say 800 million, I mean my value asset when I mark to market reduces by 800 million.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Now, the thing about it is that it does not compromise, though. It doesn't compromise the actuarial side of the NAS. Huh? In fact, if you have access to the report, the sensitivity analysis that was done shows that the NAS will still be healthy and not be compromised. The thing about here is that we are stretching out the maturity of the debentures and the like. You with me? And given that there is, you're trying to meet long-term obligations.
Right.
That's where the NAS can absorb or feel this. Now, think about it, though, that the previous government owed the NAS $460 million.
Right.
Think about the implications, therefore, of that going forward if you did not correct the situation in Barbados at this stage.
I mean, I agree that there's a receivable there that you will have to pay.
Right.
And that, and but
pension reform.
But hold on.
Uh-huh.
Any financial or pensions actually working on that would have had a receivable already included in the asset. So, in other words, I have an asset of 100,000, I have a receivable of 30,000, and the total assets being shown will be 130,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, in other words, they would have already accounted for the receivable due, unless the NAS reflected it as impaired, would have already accounted for the receivable due. So there's a fundamental point I want to really understand, and I think we've gone ahead, and I know it was necessary, but I want to understand how are we no implementing pension reform, because we must. Liabilities are fixed.
Right.
You're on a defined benefit formula, they're fixed.
Right.
The assets are being reduced. There's a bigger gap. We have to close it.
Correct.
Because it's all our NAS pensions are at stake when we get to age 67. So
right.
I want to understand
before.
How...
Before
the pension is just reduced.
Right, but the thing here is therefore that we have to, there's no doubt that you have to reform pensions going forward.
Right.
And always have to. And then the major problem for us is the aging population. And then you have the working population, the percentage of the NAS, of the aging population being reduced over time. So that in itself creates a problem because your contributions are then going to be compromised.
Right.
In the future. I mean, so for us...
So Mr. Maskell, that's double whammy.
Yeah, but for us, therefore, reform is an ongoing thing. Unless, as I was saying years ago, and some other people agreed, that we need to do something about our population size. And especially the working population. Because if you continue along this trajectory where your population is aging relative to your working population, then that in itself compromises. Now, the other thing is, how do we give them the opportunity to earn? That for me is going to be the major thing going forward, because the 460 and the other things, the being current for government and all this thing is going to provide the NAS with money or funds that it needs now to be able to invest, and to invest in such a way that it gets the kind of return that can ensure the viability of the fund, but the fund is not compromised.
I hear you, but I would like to see. I think you need to do an interim actuarial report on the NAS to see what would be the effect if the haircut is applied and what the unfunded liability is. I can't say that it wouldn't be affected until you actually see that. You need to do an interim report.
But you know these issues are complicated.
I know it's complicated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know it's very complicated, and that's why I'm bringing the issue to you as an ambassador for the government. I really think it's an issue that
you need to
look at.
Don't make it sound so sweet.
Sorry.
You just get me now thinking about your reason. Anyhow.
Well, that's your reason.
But I'm happy to hear that.
You really need to do an interim report.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but we have done, we are looking at sensitivity analysis and saying the implications for the NAS. As you know, we have experts who have been looking at this whole debt restructuring thing and who have done sensitivity analysis across the insurance companies, the commercial banks, the NAS, the central bank, and it works. This is not being done willy-nilly. All right?
No, I don't think so at all. All right, thanks.
Thank you very much for your question. It was a very good one, actually. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Go right ahead with your question.
Yes, sir. I am trying here to find out some information for a lady. She doesn't have a phone. But when she turned 65, she was getting a non-contributive pension of $290.
Okay.
When it was raised, the time before this time, she got an increase and she got $311. This time she have not gotten any. And what has happened, her husband, he was a government worker working maybe from 67 until he died like 5-6 years ago. And all they had given her on her pension was $2 more. She has not received no kind of contributions from her husband's pension. And she went into them on many occasions, and they don't seem to think that she need a raise.
Yeah, the truth is, madam, I will have to get the NAS people to deal with this. I don't know if it is as a result of the fact that she's already receiving non-contributory pension, and therefore she would not be entitled to the full extent of a survivor's. I suppose that's the survivor's pension? That's the other part that she was looking for. So I don't know if you can get the sum of the two, or in this case, you would get the sum equaling the bigger one, if
but
you see what I mean. So I will have to have that check, in all fairness. I don't know. Because what I'm saying is that if she already gets something and then her husband was getting a little more than that, then perhaps what they've done, they've given her the increment that will bring her to what her husband was getting. As opposed to, I don't know. So that's why I told you that I would need to get advice on it.
Her husband was working in government all his life, most of his life. And I think she should have been entitled, which she thinks that she should be getting some kind of benefit from her husband's pension.
I agree with that. But I'm saying to you that I can't answer it for you, because I don't know.
All right, ma'am, but thank you for asking the question. At least it's been noted, and because Dr. Maska is writing notes, so these are the areas that we can bring out on the program, and hopefully we will be able to address these issues going forward. It's now 11:50. Don't forget, we break at 11:55 for the regional roundup. In our case, we have to break at 11:53. So for the next 3 minutes, I'll just ask the questions that are going to the phone lines. We'll ask this question here from the WhatsApp. Now that Barbados has received a tranche of funds from the IMF, what will government be doing in phases 2 and 3 of the BERT program? And what impact this will have at the micro level, in other words, small people like myself? Also, what type of investment is imminent in the short and medium term that will start to fuel revenue intake and growth? So let's take the first part of the question. What will government be doing in phases 2 and 3 of the BERT program, and what impact will it have on the average Barbadian?
Well, from here on in, though, there's some performance criteria that you have to meet in relation to your reserves. There's a limit, they want you to meet that. Then there's the net domestic assets, the borrowing from the central bank and the like, that's also there. Then there will be a limit on how much you can spend on SOEs. We call them performance criteria, and I didn't come to deliver on the entire IMF program, but that's going to be the focus going forward. Then the major thing is to meet something called a primary balance, which is estimated to be eventually 6% of GDP. Now what that does, that includes back the interest payment into your balance, But that gives you the scope and the room then for paying down the outstanding debt going forward. So the focus, though, of government, I can tell you, is going to be more on trying to get growth into the economy. So we've been fortunate to have some feel of a sense of return of confidence in that people are now expressing a desire to invest all along the coast and thing. And then we've been very fortunate to have Ross University come to Barbados in such short time. But overall, from here on in, the only way you can get out of this difficulty is if you grow the economy. And growth in the economy is going to have to come from two sources: private sector, and then some initiatives on the part of government going forward.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll take a break here, a commercial break, and then we go into the regional roundup. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion and take your questions with Dr. Clyde Maskell, the economic advisor to the Minister of Finance and Prime Minister of Barbados, Mia Motley. Welcome back to Brass Tacks. This is Sanka Price, along with Dennis Johnson. And in our studio, we have Ambassador Dr. Clyde Maskell, the economic advisor to the Minister of Finance and Prime Minister of Barbados, Ms. Mia Motley. And at the break, we were looking, well, one of the questions I wanted to, I was asking a question from the on the WhatsApp, and you were explaining that, and my WhatsApp has seized up. You were explaining some of the situation to us, but I know in the interim you did get a response to the lady who called before relating to the non-contributory pension and why she didn't get this increase that she was looking forward to. So let's share that while I try to get my WhatsApp back up.
Well, what's happening is I was advised that you can get two pensions. So therefore, the person also thought that she's getting a contributory pension. And whichever is the higher of the two, if the husband's survivor pension is higher, then they will simply top up her pension to reach that level. And that's the... I didn't explain it well, but that's what I meant. That once you have two pensions, you can't have both, but you can be carried to the higher point if the survivor's pension is higher than your existing pension. Mm. And that's what I was told.
All right, so I hope she's still listening. And that is why now, before I go back to the WhatsApp where the person was asking what will government be doing in phases 2 and 3 of the BERT program and how that would impact the average Barbadian. You were talking about the monitoring aspect of the program. Now, in Jamaica, there was a monitoring body that was set up, an independent body that was set up to do this monitoring. Mm-hmm. I really can't remember the name of it, but it was similar to what we have, like a social partnership.
Yes.
So, what will we be having a similar body here? Some sort of independent body, committee or group that actually monitors this program?
I don't know its composition, but that's the intention, to have a body that's independent to do its own assessment of how the program is doing and the like. But that would be fleshed out and dealt with and put to the public in the fullness of time. Mm-hmm. But the truth is we have had such a, and I did not speak to it earlier, but the whole reason why we're here is because of the social partnership. The social partnership played its part from early in getting us to the mini budget. It was wonderful to see how governments, unions, private sector could work together, recognizing the difficulties that we had encountered or are encountering, and providing their own assessment of how the government can in fact address some of these problems. It was remarkable to see. In fact, we met more in a 2-week period than the previous government did with the social partnership in about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And that's true. Very, very long meetings.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back. Let's just do the second half of this question. We were asking, you looked at some of the phases of the BERT program, phases 2 and 3, and we really want to hear what is going to impact Barbadians. In other words, how much pain do we have to go through? We're already going through pain.
Truth is, the major pain came already. In the form of taxation. And that's what the mini budget was about. The problem that you had such a wide gap to fill, and it had to be filled quickly. So that's why taxation was used initially to try to narrow the gap. But even after we imposed the taxation and we recognized that it had come on top of previous taxation, we still could not solve the fiscal gap that we had. And as a consequence then, we had to engage in other things. Debt restructuring that helps us with $500 million. Restructuring some adjustment of our state-owned enterprises that can only be done periodically because you're talking about human beings having to face the consequences of it. And given the short period of time that we have to the end of March, which is the end of fiscal year, we could not go about the most comprehensive approach in such a short period of time. But then thereafter, we certainly have to seek to address some of these inefficient state-owned enterprises again. Mm-hmm. So it's a question of pain. I think, in all fairness, that most of the pain we're now starting to feel, that is with the imposition of the new taxes and the like. But thereafter, from next year, we'll start to see a gradual decline in that and a picking up of the economy, because that's the only sustainable way out when the economy starts to grow. And I am of the view, and I told this to the Prime Minister several weeks ago, because of the policy of having to repay $1.2 billion in arrears in the next 4 years, you're going to see almost a countervailing force. That is, as you extract, you still have to put money in the system because you have to get rid of $1.2 billion in arrears over the four-year period. So while we're extracting, we're still pushing against that tide. And for me, in addition to the return of confidence that the private sector is already starting to reflect, we can in fact get out of this in a faster time period than is being suggested. Mm-hmm. But you can't make those bold predictions without feeling somehow that people may think you're just being an optimist. Mm-hmm. I am saying that in terms of what transpired over the last 6 to 7 years, that they lost the confidence in the Barbados economy, the refusal of private sector investors to invest, that non-quantifiable quantity
non-quantifiable quantity
can in fact return so quickly, almost overnight.
All right, let me ask you this. You're talking about payback.
Yeah.
When will Barbadians start getting their VAT, businesses' VAT returns and income tax?
Right.
Because clearly you have to pay back. You can't owe.
Right.
Can't arrears.
And the thing is, right, as soon as you see the effects of these surpluses I talked about, these primary surpluses, you will then have to use those to inject new funds into the system. So people that we owe VAT refunds to, we have to pay income tax refunds. They have to be cleared in the four-year period. Mm-hmm. But this is going to come once you see the effects of the revenue and then the reduction in expenditure and then the surpluses that we will see.
So you should start seeing surpluses by early next year?
Next year, but then you have to organize a schedule for the repayment. But it has to happen. So there's no doubt about whether or not it will happen. It has to happen. This is a major part of the program.
And the last question I'll ask before I go back to the phone lines, it's been 3 months since the budget. Mm-hmm. 3 months have gone. Has there any indication that some of the measures are actually working?
Yes.
In terms of bringing in revenue and... Yeah. And making a difference to the coffers?
Actually, I've said this over the years. The issue for me is not how much deficit you have, but your ability to finance the deficit. Barbados ran into difficulty because the commercial banking sector could no longer sustain what it was providing in terms of financing to government coffers. The central bank picked up the slack, and this is what we were calling the printing of money. Well, that was unsustainable. The NIS was then being forced in spite of government not making payments to the NAS, the NAS was being forced then to hold additional debt. Now, the ability, therefore, to finance your deficit is the issue. Once that the deficit, therefore, is contained and reduced, then it puts less pressure on the central bank. And that's really the elephant in the room. Once you print money, you have to lose reserves. What we have seen in the last couple of weeks, months, for sure, is a containment of that. It's actually started to see a build back of reserves because, of course, of the announcement on the external debt. But also, we're starting to see some trickling in terms of more foreign exchange to the central bank itself. And I don't want to quote the figures. They will be known in the fullness of time. But there's evidence that our fiscal position is starting to settle down. And as a consequence, there's less pressure on the central bank to provide the financing that they were providing before. That's a very good sign initially. And Sankar, believe this or not, we're able to do this on a daily basis to see how things are looking in terms of revenue and expenditure, financing, central bank reserves on a daily basis, something that was unheard of.
All right, I got a couple of follow-up questions, but I think I should go to the phone lines first. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I think you should go to the phone lines first.
Oh,
good afternoon.
Thank you very much for waiting.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson, and good afternoon to my Mr. Clyde Maskell.
I noted that my name came last. Yeah. It's okay, Miss.
No, that means you're first.
Thank you. Thank you, dear.
just after Dennis Johnson.
I'm aware.
I should have put Sanka last.
You're not putting him last.
Clyde, you and I have spoken on many occasions. I feel very comfortable with you, which I don't feel with most people because they're not ready for the truth.
Correct.
You know me as being very frank, you accept me as being very frank. Now, I would like to ask you a question.
Yes.
And this question is not only haunting me, this is haunting a lot of people in Barbados. Have we stopped printing money? That's number one. Altogether.
Not yet. We have slowed the pace of it, remarkably. But and that's what the debt restructuring, that's what these things will do, because they reduce your expenditure and therefore narrow the gap. But
I understand that.
Let me explain to you something. Because recently we went to the Parliament of Barbados and we passed some legislation. Prior to that legislation, the concept of printing money was defined in law. Every time we go to Parliament to the estimates debate in March, and the government determines what revenue it is going to forecast for the coming fiscal year, the printing of money at the central banking courts would be 10% of that. It's like an overdraft facility at the bank. Miss B is like,
so it's an expense.
You hear me?
It's an expense.
Right. So we have reduced that from 17.5% to 7.5%.
Oh, wow.
You understand? Okay. So you can no longer get that brand of financing at the central bank.
Then
what we did is that without having to come to Parliament, the central bank was able to purchase treasury bills and saying in an order that was determined purely by the discretion of the board. So that's why we racked up almost $2 billion in treasury bills. But you see, there was no law to restrict that. So in addition to the 7.5%, Parliament also recently passed a law that restricts the central bank to 10% of the expenditure. With me? So which would work out to be about, if the expenditure is $4 billion, you can only hold $400 million in debentures or treasury bills. With me?
Okay.
So we have now been able, because of what we're doing on the fiscal side, we are going to be able to reduce dramatically the central bank's ability to provide financing to government. But we are now in a period, an interim period, in which we are saying, hey, we don't want to be in a position to be going back to the central bank in that magnitude, but this is going to convert very soon to a situation in which we're going to have surpluses as a government. So you wouldn't have to be looking to finance the deficits that of the magnitude that we saw in the past.
Okay,
right?
One more question, mm-hmm. because I know time is not on our side.
Right.
Okay, in direct reference to the Auditor General's report, mm-hmm. what measures have now been put in place to recover funds missing from various ministries and government agencies? Because, don't laugh, I don't think it's right mm. that Peter the public should mm. be paying for Paul's mistakes. Mm. I cannot deal with that. I wasn't brought up in a system where that was done. People need to be held accountable and responsible.
Yeah.
And they were placed in that position. They need to be held accountable. I don't know where the forensic experts are going to come from in accounting, yeah. but you need to put them in the various agencies to find out where and who received that money, because there's no such thing as missing money.
Yeah. Now, let me address this, because this is serious. State-owned enterprises are those enterprises that are not part of central government. You would mean they're off budget. Now, the problem that we had in the past is that those institutions or entities could make decisions without reference to the Ministry of Finance. And therefore, we put in systems in place to prevent that from happening. Read me? So that anytime you have to do anything like borrowing, in fact, those entities cannot borrow for the next 4 years anyhow. They will have to come through the Ministry of Finance. But some things also happened in the past. We had a Tourism Development Act that gave concessions to hoteliers. And the initial act required that such things were approved by the Ministry of Finance. An amendment was made to grant the Minister of Tourism the right to give concessions to hoteliers without reference to the Ministry of Finance. Those are the kind of things that we have to stop, because you create loopholes. And in any case, it's about controlling your fiscal position, and to do so, you have to have the right kind of laws
internal
that would permit
control.
And grant.
Internal, of course. Control.
You can't allow that willy-nilly granting of concessions in an environment where your fiscal condition is poor. And even when it is good, it's not desirable.
Mr. Clyde Masco, I hope you will not be a stranger to Voice of Barbados brass tacks. I hope that any time a conflict comes up between callers, you will be there to nip it in the bud.
Thank you, dear. I still feel a little way about being second to Dennis, though. Such
don't
is
worry
life.
About that. Dennis,
I can live with it.
For a long time.
I understand, Miss B.
Have a good day.
All right, thank you very much for those questions. I actually stole my thunder, because that was one of the questions I was going to ask about the printing of money, but it was answered. We go back to the phone lines. Remember, we take a break at 12:30 for the latest. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
I have a question for Mr. Masco.
Yeah.
Hi, Mr. Masco. I am in the same boat as the lady who called in connection with her bonds,
uh-huh.
right?
Yeah.
I am currently unemployed, and I am not at a pensionable age.
Right.
Now, couldn't government have found some way to assist people like myself? Couldn't the government say, well, look, let's give these type of people at least 10 or 15% of your principal amount up front?
Yes.
As a buffer,
yeah.
right? And then you can implement your program. At least that buffer will help you to do something. it will help you.
Yes.
But yeah. I, in turn, will be receiving only $350 in December compared to over $4,000.
Yeah. It
and I'm currently unemployed.
Yeah.
And I'm not pensionable age. And I put my money with you all in order to invest. This is a risk, I can understand that. But why can't government come up with this, some sort of strategy like that? You know, you cannot put a plaster on every wound. A man gets shot with a gun. Mm-hmm. A man gets stabbed with a knife. You can't put a plaster. You should have drilled down some more on all of these people who has bonds and treasury bills and find out, you know, exactly what is happening.
Yeah. I can tell you that we're currently looking, because, I mean, we have hearts. Huh? As I said earlier, public policy is not perfect. But we can't do anything to compromise the homemade program that we've put with the IMF. However, there is thought is being given to your concerns. The thing is, though, we can't do anything to compromise that. But I'm sure that we can be creative enough or innovative enough to do something about the condition of certain individuals. Now, the thing is there is that that's why I said it's a whole question of equity when you come to public policy. Because once you start to say, well, so-and-so has been impacted, then individual B is going to react as well.
No, but
and then
you can
individual
do this across,
C.
Yeah, but you can do this across the board for everyone. You can say, look, we are a caring government. Let's give everybody 5%, 10% as a buffer. So everyone is covered.
The problem I appreciate what you're saying. The issue is we had a target to reduce the interest cost by, and that was the constraining thing in making the policy.
But
we had to try to reach that figure of $500 million reduction.
But okay, can you not say, well, look, forget about interest, all the people just paid about the principal amount?
No, that was still compromise, because you see, it still becomes part of your expenditure.
Yeah, but you
it's
said
what we call below the line.
Component.
Yeah.
You know, you said the interest is the biggest component. So if you decide, like, everybody, we are not paying interest.
But you see, right. But what happens, to give you back the principal, though, because recall that we have been printing money for a very long period, would have required that action. And that would compromise the very fiscal discipline that you're trying to invoke. You and me, there's no easy way out. That's all I'm saying to you. Because in order to give you back your principal, it would be treated what we call below the line, but we'll have to get it from some source, and that source would have been the poor old central bank.
Mm-hmm. But I just want to know if, based on people calling in, if government can look at something, they must
Believe you me, of course, what's happening is that you sit back, and after you've introduced a policy, you listen. Don't let politicians fool you. They read papers, they listen to the public, and they are concerned because that's the nature of the game. You know, so some of them tell you that they've never read a paper and they don't listen to public opinion. You can take that with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, but, you know, I think government should come up with a percentage.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Some percentage.
I appreciate right? And I can hear the hurt in your voice. And I can hear the hurt of your voice.
Because, I mean, I was thinking that when I get this $364, I was trying to bring it to you, and you tell me how to spend it and how to invest it.
Mm.
Because I really don't know what to do with it. Honestly, I don't know.
Yeah. Legitimate.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for your call.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take a commercial break, and from here we'll go straight into the latest.
Tell me, go on.
Dr. Maskell will be leaving us at this stage, and I'd like to thank him because he originally only came for an hour.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for coming, Clyde.
It was worth it.
All right. So we go on to the latest, and we'll be right back.